All right, and welcome to the State of Games. I'm Dice Hate Me.
I'm Puppy Shogun.
And I'm Feld Fangirl.
And we are a podcast all about anything and everything related to board and card games and more.
And more.
So welcome to episode 130, or as we like to call it, the one about mysterious mysteries.
Ooh.
It was originally going to be called the one about passion fruit smoothies, but we overruled TC, although that would have been delicious.
I think it still is in my heart.
We should have all had passion fruit smoothies tonight.
What little booster package did you put into your smoothie today?
I got wheatgrass.
Mine's protein.
None for me, because it would have to be Whole 30 compliant.
Oh, get out of here with that mess.
Diets.
At any rate, on this episode, we're going to be talking about our favorite games about mysteries, whether it's a whodunit, a hidden movement game, or deducing something mysterious. Of course, not all of us may like games with certain mysteries, so we'll likely have some debates there. And of course, we may even talk about games with mysteries and why are they so prevalent and cool, because they are cool.
I just like when you say whodunit.
Whodunit.
In a southern accent.
Whodunit, y'all.
I feel like that's how it should have been said for like years and years.
Of course.
I don't understand.
Oh, I can't even fake that.
Hercule Poirot comes on the Orient Express and goes, "Who done it, y'all?" Anyway, we'll get more into our mysterious mysteries during the meat of the podcast. You may notice, of course, we're down one podcaster this time around, but that's because shortly before recording, a huge tree just about fell on Daryl's house. So nothing was damaged except for the tree, but he's out for this podcast.
And a folding table.
It looked like a glass table, but it could have been a folding table.
Oh, was it? Oh,
I don't know. Some sort of table was slightly harmed, I think. We don't know the reason behind the fall. So, ooh, it's a mystery. Daryl said it was wind and rain, but we don't believe him.
It's the government.
It's the government conspiracy. Anyway, let's talk about what we've been up to since last podcast. So, TC, you went adventuring with Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, for the first time in like 3 or 4 years. And I did the DMing, so I told the story. And I think, because last time we didn't get into any of this, right?
You said you were about to adventure.
Yeah. I was about to, yeah. So we did, I did a little like intro kind of to D&D scenario, and we had one person who was playing because they were kind of like, well, if everybody's playing this, so I'll play, and they dropped out about halfway through, and then we just kept playing, and I don't think, I don't know, it just wasn't their thing. They couldn't get into like the whole idea of role-playing, so it was like, it made me realize that I should probably not try to push like any other role-playing games on the group as well, because then that person would not be involved at all. So anyway, but everybody else had a really good time. The one time we made our characters, this time I just started off with action because I was like, every time I've played, it's always been kind of like, well, we just sit around and talk for 30 minutes and then we do something.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, you hear an explosion. You're on the rooftop. It's like a metal roof. It's 3 stories up. There's no way down. There's three, like, it's slanted. And all of a sudden, goblins come out, right? And attack you, right? Kill the goblins. Shut the door if you want to. I don't know. And so they fought on a slippery rooftop and against goblins. And then I did the whole Lost style thing where everybody gets... Eventually, everybody's running around fighting things, and then these things that are too powerful come up, and they all get knocked out, right? Mm-hmm. And they wake up later, and now they're forced to do a quest. They don't have to choose. They're like, well, you're all like, you know, indentured servants now, so you got to go do this quest.
You don't have any weapons. You got to rely on your wits.
Well, they still have weapons. Whatever. They can have those things because it's D&D. Why not? But yeah, and then we did another. So we had all that and a cool little backstory. And then we went out and had a first little encounter on a bridge with, a caravan full of supplies for an orphanage. Because I needed a reason for them to actually get on the road and try to save him. So I was like, oh no, but they'll kill the horses because one of the people really likes animals. And then, oh no, there's food for the orphans in the back seat. How are we going to get this? You can't do this to us bandits. Right. You know, so, so they had a nice little battle there. And I think, you know, and that's, just, I like all that stuff. And next time on TC's D&D, we're going to have like a nice flashback episode where everybody learns about their backstories. So we're going to sit around the campfire and have flashback episode, right? Which I think I've never done before, and I think that's fun. So, but yeah, so I did that. That's one thing. And then there's Unpub in Centerville. I got a chance to go do an Unpub, a mini. And it was in Centerville, Virginia, and it was, wow, I'm blanking on the place it was. But that's fine. But we had, I got to sit down and play Keith and Paul Owen's game, the Marvelous, is it Marvelous Marvels?
Yes.
Marvelous Marvels.
Marvelous Marvels. Okay, I didn't want to say like Glorious Glorinations or something. Yeah, but Marvelous Marvels, I played it again. It still needs some work. It's like a good solid base. It got so much faster, but they took away some of the things that were fun about the original in making it this new way. And I'm like, go dial it back. But all the stuff that you did to make it combo-y, like you could do like three or four things on your turn if you did it right, right? All that is good. Now bring that other thing back that you just like put off to the side, and you get a nice game. So did that. Watched them play Last Bastion while I sat there and typed on the computer forever and ever and ever, and cut out pieces of paper, which I do at every single Unpub. So I mean, I cut out like 50 sheets of paper into cards, and then type things up. And I got to play, but I also played the Pole Position, which has a new name. I can't remember. It's alliteration. So I never remember things that have alliteration. It's like betters and bankers and beasts and bankers and betters now. But it's Dr. Wits.
Oh, Dr. Wits.
I don't remember what it's called. I didn't know if you guys knew.
No. I have no idea.
Because I get to play it, but it used to be called Pole Position, and it was like betting on horses.
Yeah, betting on horses, right.
Making bets. Then we played at Unpub a long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. And much more streamlined, much, much better. Still has that little issue where you give out tickets and you write down things to people, and you're like giving them out during the game, which that is fine, but I can never remember, like, if I give you this bet, what does that, like, and you take that bet, how much do we owe each, like, it was just, I never can get that part until, like, about halfway through the game. So, anyway, well, it was a little confusing. But I got to play My Father's Work again, whole new scenario that I made about war, and luckily they went off on the direction in the story that I had written a little bit more than the part that I was, had a lot more holes, so... That was great, and I got to see them play, and everybody seemed to really, really like it, and that's a good sign because I had spruced up a lot of the things that I've done from Unpub before, made it a lot more personal. You actually had thing, which I thought was cool. Like there was a thing that Keith did, which, again, I learned I need to incentivize a little bit more, but like he got a token from a little story event that was personal to him. He had to pick up the computer, read it. And he would read the story, and he'd go, oh, okay. And he put it back, and no one could see what he saw, right? And then that event came up later, and he was like, oh. And he followed that advice, did what it said, and then another generation and around later, it came back into play. And so because he had that token, he was given a token, and then because he had that token, whoever had that token was to pick up the computer and read that passage. So he got another passage. And so that sort of got me going down this, now I can have a storyline where you're telling the story and changing the game board every turn, every round. But then also, there's these small stories going on for personal people, per person, depending on what they do. So you have both the story in the middle and your own story, and that's so much better, it feels better.
Well, personalizes things.
Yeah, personalizes things. Yeah. And it feels better because it's something that you don't get to do in games. Like, you really don't get I can remember Android trying to do that a bit. Had personal baggage, and you could go on your own story, but it just felt... Oh, man, Android's so big potential, which just isn't fully realized.
See,
in that game.
This does what like we did when we first played Underground, when my character Stacy had the cocaine problem and all that stuff. You know, it's like you're that's role playing. It's like you're coming up with your own stuff. But now with My Father's Work, you actually, when you're playing, you don't have to do that because your story is, I mean, you still can role play with it, obviously. And you could ignore that storyline if you want to, but if you take it, then it becomes very personal. I love that. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, if you ignore it, too, I mean, some other things happen, too, in certain cases. Sometimes nothing happens. You're like, oh, crap, I just missed that opportunity. That would have been fun. But other times, it's just, you get an alternate storyline if you don't do the thing. But all those things are cool. They just take forever to make. But yeah, anyway, that's that. But still, with, like, Underground, like, I love that kind of... I like when games give you a story, but I also like it when your story evolves from the game. So I don't think in Underground I would go back and change it and give you individual storylines. I think just getting to explore the game is fun.
Yeah, I think it's fun.
But yeah, and for finally, I've been talking for a while, so I'll let other people talk. But I played at Rocky Road, a la mode, with everybody before we played Dungeons & Dragons, and that went over really well. Super fast, again, like, I knew it was fast before, but it's like 25 minutes, something like that, right? And, you know, even with the person that ended up dropping out of D&D later, it's like, they still enjoyed Rocky Road, a la mode. And I don't know if I talked about Mega Man Pixel Tactics before. Did I talk about that at all?
You've mentioned it before.
You talked about getting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it, and I've played it a bunch of times now.
So it was worth the money then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could have been terrible, and I would have said, yeah, it's fine. But no, I had, like, the three packages of different characters that you can play as for Mega Man. It's nice and nostalgic for me. It's kind of like an insta-buy. I would have bought the bigger Mega Man board game when it was on Kickstarter, but it just looked like it was a terrible train wreck of a thing. And from what I read afterwards, it was kind of a terrible train wreck of a thing. So... So that's good. And so I picked up one that I knew would be at least tolerable, and it turns out it's much more fun than I expected. So and people that were on Twitter were saying something bad about it, and I had to shame them for saying bad things about it, because it was fun. It was good. I don't know. It was fun. Anyway, well, on to you, Jessica.
Well, I have been playing Terraforming Mars. So, Chris, what have you been
game?
Up to?
No. Shocking, exactly. I was going to say, I'm looking at the show notes, and we all kind of pad these out some, but we kind of do some surprises as well. And all her says is Terraforming Mars. I'm like, shocking. It's the same thing every time. Do you own any other games? Do you want to play other games?
I own so many games, and I have so many unplayed games that
you should start
through.
A Terraforming Mars podcast. It should just be you talking about strategy for terraforming Mars.
Oh, gosh.
Because, hey, if it wins the Spiel des Jahres, and we'll talk about that in just a little bit, I mean, you can have a huge Woo-hoo! Audience.
Yeah, Terraforming Our Hearts, the podcast.
Yeah, no, I'm not doing that. But I have been playing a bunch of Terraforming Mars, and I'm realizing that I think two players, probably my favorite player can. I actually really enjoyed it, two players. I actually think I might playing it solo might actually surpass that, but I've only gotten one play in because I enjoyed that so much, but I need to play some more. I told my friends that I played with this weekend that I'm going to challenge myself 1 week to play a solo game with a different corporation every night to see how I feel, but I don't know if I can do that. But outside of playing Terraforming Mars, on Friday, I got together with my friend Lynn. She is in my Thursday night game group, and I think she's just so happy that there's another woman in the group because, like, she games, but nobody in her family does, and they all think she's crazy. And she's a little bit older than me. So sometimes, since I have Fridays off of work, she asked if I wanted to come and game, and she said Castles of Burgundy is her favorite game, so I said, why don't we play Castles of Burgundy? And so we played the classic Stefan Feld game, and as always, it was wonderful. And then after that, she introduced me to the game Paperback, which I had not played before. And I was a little bit intimidated because I suck at word games. I mean, I just, when you make me have to think about something, like, and like at the tip of my brain, I need time, you know? And so It's just like I didn't really play much Scrabble or anything like that. So taking a bunch of letters and trying to come up with words really intimidated me. But
well, you're the one who just used desiccating before we started the podcast.
Yeah, but
so
I'm a scientist. I'm a scientist. So instead of saying I'm drying out, I say I'm desiccating. So this game is a deck builder. But what you're building your deck with are cards with just a single letter or double letters. And if it's a double letter, you can't transpose the letters unless there is some other special ability that lets you do it. And some of the cards will have different abilities. Some of the cards are like a one-time use as soon as you use it to make a word. So, and I mentioned, I think on the last podcast, that I am really starting to like deck builders. And so I really enjoyed this play, but I also won. So I can't judge if I really like it because I won on my first play. So I need to play again and lose and see if I still like it. I'm just so fickle that way.
But the key is, did you win by doing the long word?
No. It was really tough. Like the combinations that we got were, there were two rounds where I couldn't do anything. All I had were consonants in my hand. So I couldn't do anything. I just had to discard them and say, okay, it's your turn already.
It's too bad you weren't playing the Polish version.
Well, yeah. So,
but my apologies to our Polish audience.
Yeah, but my strategy was, so in order to win the game, you have to produce like words with cards, and then you add up your score, and that score is how much money you have to purchase any new cards. And then there are these... I can't remember what the cards are called, but they are the only ones that are worth like victory points at the end. So you need to spell out words so that you can earn a big enough score to purchase these ones. And they start at like $5 or 5 cents to purchase like 30 victory points or something like that. I can't remember. And then the next one goes to 8 cents and then 11 cents and stuff to get more victory points. And so as soon as I like earned 5 cents, I just grabbed one and just grabbed one and just grabbed one. So that's when she waited to get like, make like a 7-letter word to.
Yeah.
Like,
she's just waiting.
So she went,
and
so she,
right.
So I won just because I grabbed all the fivers real quick. So, honestly, that's the only way I could possibly win because I can't word games. Like I played, Gilhova's word game, Prolix. I know he changed the name. I can't remember what he changed it to. But, oh my gosh, I sucked at that game. It was the worst. So embarrassing. I played that with him and Matt Wolf, and it was just very embarrassing. So, but I really did enjoy Paperback, which surprised me.
You just have to play that solo then.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, practice.
Then this Saturday, I had a big game day at my local library that I hosted, and that's where I played a 4-player game of Terraforming Mars, which went fine. And I had a horrible game because I got crap cards that didn't let me do anything. And
yeah, it was
then...
a bad draw.
Yeah. Shush up. And then after that, we played Istanbul, the kind of route building game where you're trying to set collect and do all these different kinds of things in order to collect rubies. And then the first person to get to 5, we played a 3-player game, so they had to get to 5 rubies. And then... tiebreaker after that.
Was that your first time?
No, that was like my third time playing it. The first time I played, I think I won the first time I played. Second time I played, I got like 2 rubies and that was it. It was like really, I was like, I hate this game. So we played again this time and the guy who won got 5 and then on our last turns, me and the other person got 4. So we were just, you know, not too far behind. So that wasn't too bad. So I kind of enjoy that one. I think I just like it. I don't love it. I have my copy of Yokohama, which I have not read the rules yet and played yet. That's my goal this week, and I think I'll just enjoy that one more than Istanbul. And then after that, we played Dice Hate Me's The Great Heartland Hauling Company for real. Like, we played it with the actual rules this time, because I played it at the Granite Game Summit in April with Eric Buscemi, and we played so many rules wrong, we realized. So, like, so many. I mean, he was teaching us, I was like, we weren't doing that last time. What? No, we didn't do that last time.
I would be fascinated to see how many rules you got.
I won so fast. I was like $20 ahead of him, like really early on in that game. So we played a 3-player game, and I was so far behind at the beginning. Every time they moved to the spot I wanted to go to. It was so irritating. So
that's part of the game, the blocking.
I know. Well, they didn't do it on purpose. They weren't. They I mean, I'm no threat, so they didn't pay attention to me. But I caught up. And it was actually a pretty close game. But I am realizing that pick up and deliver is one of my favorite mechanics. I just love it. That's why I did like, you know, Istanbul, trying to go up and pick up things and then transfer them over somewhere else.
Well, what was it? The Oracle of Delphi.
Yes, I love the Oracle of Delphi because I love racing. So you combine pick up and deliver with the racing. So I love that. So, yep. But with Great Holland Company, when you're racing too, you're racing to get the most money. So I just love that, and trying to, you know, decide on whether or not you want to wait to carry these goods to a city that where it's going to be worth more, or just go to a nearest one that might not be as tempting for other people, just so you can get the cash and just kind of move slowly ahead. I just like that balance of which decisions you're going to make. And so I really want this game. But thankfully, since somebody in my group, my friend Brian has it, so he has it. So that'll just encourage me to go and meet up with him to play that game. Because I'm like obsessed with it now. I just really want to play it like a lot. So that was the last game I played. And then the only thing I have on the docket is more Terraforming Mars later. So
shocking.
No, I'm just kidding. So, Chris, what have you been up to?
What have I been up to? Okay. Well, Chris Mosley, a friend of the podcast, and he used to archive and do all of our notes and stuff, but he's been a little busy lately, especially moving, so he's moving to a new place. And he wanted to have kind of a good goodbye going away gaming weekend at his place, and so we all said sayonara to that. It's a great place to game. Jessica, I know you said you wanted to be there, but...
Yeah, I couldn't be there. And that place really was amazing. It was so huge. There was so much room for us to game.
It's a really, really nice place. But he's going to actually be closer to Dan, so he'll be able to go over to Dan Patrice's house more often. So we moved to Apex. But anyway, I was able to get in like a pseudo-official game of Fate of the Elder Gods because I've gotten almost all the pieces. I don't have enough final cultists and investigators to play with, but I had some prototype pieces, and we played, like, you know, with the real Fate pieces and the cards and everything. So it was a four-player game. Actually, Mosley was in that with us. And, of course, he was being nefarious and trying to usurp me at every turn. But also Brian Delk and his wife, Lindsay, were playing with us. And they were first-time players. And it was really super tight. It was cool because they kind of got the game. They really got into it. And Brian came close. I was playing as hard as I could, too. I wasn't pulling any punches. So it was cool to play a game that was that tight and to be kind of down to the ropes. We played after that. Lillian got there. We played Kingsport Festival, the card game. So we played a five-player game of that. And I was looking forward to Daryl being on because he didn't like the original Kingsport Festival. So I don't know. Do you guys have any opinions on Kingsport Festival?
I've never played it. I know nothing about it.
I liked the original version. I just liked the fact that, I mean, for me, it was like the original version was like Final Fantasy in the middle and Kingsburg on the outside, huh. Right? Like,
it's true.
Because in Final Fantasy, you had these like, oh, I'm going to pick which way I want to upgrade
paths.
My character.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You could go off and upgrade your character in the middle. But I hated that whole board, you had to like look, you're like looking over it. I don't want to do that in front of, you know, this is a terrible radio to move over your microphone and act it out. But no, I don't like how you have to scan the board to read all these little pieces of text everywhere. I wish it was just like your own little board that you could check. So I was hoping that like the dice game would just be like, you would have that on your own thing and then the rest was out there.
Nope.
No, it's not.
But it's a lot simpler and it's like... I mean, it kind of shares a little bit with the big game, and you can do sort of branching paths, but at the same time, you only have so many dice to work with each turn, so your choices are fairly limited. You can start pressing your luck and using your cards as you get them. You're drafting either servitors or monsters and working your ways up to the Elder Gods and the Ancient Ones and things like that until the top is Azathoth, and if you find some in Azathoth, the entire game ends. And then you count up your points and so on and so forth. And you're fighting against at least one investigator that raids on three different times during the game. So you got to have these kind of monsters that have protective symbols on the bottom, little pistols. It's interesting. I'll bring it to Origins. I don't want to go on too much more about it. It's pretty easy to play. You do have to, like, when you're rolling, you don't have to memorize what everybody does. You just kind of look and you say, like, oh, well, that guy over there does something cool. I'm rolling some dice. and these other dice could possibly give me these other symbols that I need to get that guy. Maybe I'll press my luck and try to combo and get that particular monster or elder god or things like that. And it's fun. I'd be interested to see your take of it at Origins. And since Daryl was not happy with the first Kingsport Festival, we'll see.
It's probably so thematic.
Yeah, it's totally thematic. I mean, it has some flavor to it, which is good, but it could be anything. It doesn't have to be Elder Gods or Ancient Ones at that point or anything Cthulian or Lovecraftian. But it was interesting that I played Fate of the Elder Gods and then Kingsport Festival, the card game, right after, because Kingsport Festival was one of the things that inspired Daryl to come up with the idea for Fate. So didn't plan it that way. It just happened. Anyway, after that, I got a chance to play Take the Bait, which was fun. Take the Bait's really coming along. I've got a lot of good suggestions for it. I'm going to have some more changes before Origins. One of the cool suggestions that came out of this playtest was a suggestion from Matt Wolf, which was in the deep part of the lake, or at least for the beginning of the game, the deep part of the lake, there's a giant bass called Old Bubba. And he's like the white whale. You can never catch Old Bubba. And if you do catch Old Bubba, he's going to eat one of your fish that you've already caught. So you have to be really careful. But what we're going to do is we're going to have an Old Bubba encounter track. And so the more you encounter Old Bubba, the more renowned you get in the lake. You're like, I had Old Bubba on the hook, you know, and he got loose. And so
that's cool.
Through the weekend, the more you encounter Old Bubba, you might lose some fish, but the more you encounter Old Bubba, the more points you'll score at the end of the game because you're on that renowned track, so which I thought was really cool. So it makes Old Bubba even more interesting to try to catch. Other than that, after that weekend, I finally got to play Alchemists, which I had gotten as a Christmas present from Daryl, I think, two Christmases ago. And I finally got a chance to play it. I'm not going to comment right now, because we're going to save that for the meat of the podcast, because that's one of the things that we're going to bring up during our Mysterious Mysteries portion of the podcast. And I'm sure we'll have some debates, because I know TC holds a different opinion of that game than I do. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, I'll return to this one in 1 second. Other than that, I also, besides gaming, I bought some kayaks, and Lillian and I went kayaking. This is something I've been wanting to go do for a long time, and I really enjoy kayaking, like when I either, you know, rent one. I've rented kayaks before, borrowed friends in the past, things like that. But finally, I bit the bullet, went and bought a kayak. And actually, Lillian had ordered an inflatable one, and she liked it so much. We went the next day, and Dick's Sporting Goods was having this huge sale. We bought her one. We bought a roof rack, a new roof rack for the car that carries two kayaks, all kinds of stuff. So we're kind of big into it now. We'll see if we go so back
outdoorsy.
In no time.
So outdoorsy.
I know.
Yeah, you were teasing me about the outdoors. Other than that, really quick, I'll just mention that I'm starting to update my YouTube channel. I didn't really have a YouTube channel before, but I thought I'd just start playing around because I've got my new awesome office behind me now. I've got studio space. I can do video work. Cryptozoic was kind enough to send me a review copy of Ghostbusters 2, so I did a quick unboxing video of that, and I'll probably see if I can get it on the table and maybe do a review video of it. Just start playing around, dipping my toes. Yeah, TC. I can see TC's face right now. Beyond that, I wanted to bring this up, which I thought was cool, because we've been playing a lot of Seven Wonders Duel, and recently we also bought Seven Wonders Duel Pantheon, because one thing that I had noticed in playing with Lillian is that I had managed to score a military instant victory almost every single time. And so we bought Pantheon, and I wanted to see if it would correct it. So some people said that it kind of balances the game out with different options. We got it, and then we ended up, she finally won one, and then I won instantly with science, which had never happened before. But I recognized that before that, every other game that I'd played, except for one, had been decided with instant victories instead of scoring. So I went on Twitter and opened up a poll, and 79 people voted on this, and the question was, have you had more instant wins or wins by score when you've played Seven Wonders Duel? And from the 79 votes, 17% of the people who answered had said they had more wins by instant, and 83% had more wins by score. Now, that's a huge disparity.
Yeah, but you guys are playing it wrong.
We're not, though. That's the thing, too, is we also, after I posted the poll, somebody suggested, because they saw my picture, and they said, well, you had the military the tokens where you lose money and when you cross a certain threshold, they were in the wrong spot during that picture. And I was like, oh, you're right. It was a good catch, but we usually don't play that way. So we went back and we absolutely read the rules again, played a single turn, an age with the rules and the rules for Pantheon. We weren't doing anything wrong. We were doing what we always played as. Still instant wins. I've still never scored that game except for like the second time I played it, which was a year ago or something like that. Hmm. So
that's weird. I played it 3 times and we instant won 1 time, and that was my fault. Like, I totally should not have allowed. I let it. I let the other person win. So I just felt they should get a science victory. I mean, they were very smart.
It was
so,
a good deed for the day.
Of course. No, but I would think. That's weird. It just feels like you should score most of the time because it's just, unless you just let them go and pick on one strategy. Well, I don't know.
It seemed like that was... I
play too much spite.
Yeah, well, see, there were a few different comments on Twitter, and one of the prevalent ones were that there shouldn't be that many instant wins because, you know, as a good opponent, you should be able to try to block that. And I'm like, I agree with that, but sometimes... I play so that I can try to bank in certain ways to entice my opponent to take those cards so that I can see the ones that are face up that I can go for and press that advantage. So I'll say, well, I'll do this. And especially with Pantheon, Pantheon allows you to kind of just stall for a little bit. Like you can, you know, especially in Age 2, you can elect to do something with the Pantheon instead of taking a card. And so you can kind of stutter step the cadence of taking cards and force your opponent into taking a card so then you can take another card you want later. So then that's a way to actually force a scientific win now. Military is if the other person's trying to really beef up on score and they're not doing military at all, they don't want to take the chance of taking military because it's a wasted action. Now, they can burn that card, but there may be 2 or 3 other cards out there that's really good for them, and it's like you can kind of lure them into that. And maybe I'm a savant. I don't know. I have no idea. But
I don't know. I think that's just silly. You should always, if they go military, you got to go quick. You're just like, I'm taking it back. No, I'm taking it back.
I have no idea what guys are talking about because I've still never played a Seven Wonders game.
Oh, man. You could start with that one. It doesn't even matter. You could start with either one. They're both good.
I've just never had an opportunity to play them.
You should totally try Seven Wonders Duel. I think you'd really like it. But I mean, I still love it. The problem is, it's like I'd really like to see what the score is like. Because most of the time, when Lillian and I have played, I can tell she's going to crush me with score. So that's why I go for the instant win. I'm like, I'm just going to push for it. And I usually get it. So, I don't know.
That might be the problem.
Yeah.
You never want to show your cards too early. You never want to be like, well, I'm totally going to win by score. Then you're like, well, I guess I got to go... Go for science or military. I'll lose this.
Exactly.
Right? But anyway, don't want to show your cards.
The Pantheon expansion adds a lot to the game. I really think it's an awesome expansion to the game, and it's just a great game. So anybody out there listening right now, hey, let us know. I'm curious. You know, tweet at us. Let me know again if you have more instant wins or wins by score, and if you feel like that we're doing something wrong, which we're not. But if you feel like it, you can let me know that too. So other than that, we got a few other things we want to get through before we get to the meat of the podcast. First off, DiceHateMe.com is going to be celebrating its 7th anniversary on June 1st. And I'm going to have a giveaway. I'm not going to tell you what that giveaway is just yet, but it's going to be cool. It's going to be thematic to the actual history of the site. And all you have to do is follow me, DiceHateMe, on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. That's right, Instagram. Big on Instagram right
now.
No, Instagram's awesome. I love it. And you watch for the celebration on Thursday, June the 1st. Basically, you got to start following my Instagram because I have all kinds of cool content that I don't put anywhere else. I'm going to do little mini reviews on Instagram. I really like the platform. I've only been active about a week and a half, but it's fun. I really enjoy it. I'll also mention that I'm having an auction on BGG that ends on May 31st that has Origins delivery available. So check that out and help me to pay for Origins and help me to reclaim my house.
Yeah. Reclaim.
Right.
Well, I mean, I don't know why you don't just sleep on the board games.
I practically do at this point. It's ridiculous. All right, so
just find one of the coffin boxes.
TC, why don't you talk to us about the Spiel des Jahres?
Ah, Spiel des Jahres. I don't have a German accent.
Probably best not to.
The nominees have been announced, and we have all the different Spiel des Jahres awards: the Kinderspiel, the regular Spiel, the real Spiel deal. That's what I wrote, and the Kenner not advanced Spiel, which I had to be corrected by W. Eric Martin because he has that personality of can't let it go.
No, not at all.
So. Kenner Connoisseur Award Spiel. And so, I don't know. I wrote, I just called the Kinderspiel Kinder crap.
It's the baby games.
It's the baby games. So I don't have the list up there, but hey, if you want to play baby games, go for it. There's Kinderspiel there.
Hey, here, I'll just tell you that it says three of the titles.
Too Cool is on there.
Ice Cool, yes. So let's just mention Ice Cool because it's fun. So there you go. That's all you need to know.
Ice Cool is okay. I don't like it anymore, but that's fine. Then we have Spiel nominees. We have King Domino from Bruno Cathala. And I'm only saying that because I know the designer there. And then we have Magic Maze, which everybody has been playing and really loving. It's like a real-time tile-laying cooperative game. And everyone's going crazy, and I'll probably play that at Origins, I'm sure, because it's a... super good convention style game. And then something from Cosmos called El Dorado or whatever that no one's heard of and is the kind of like the upstart that everyone can root for if they want the underdog. You got the underdog, and that's El Dorado from Cosmos. And someone out there is probably going, no, what are you talking about? That's an amazing game because it's the underdog, right? But I'm rooting for King Domino just because it's Bruno Cathala, and I think he's awesome, an awesome dude. But I think Magic Maze will win, personally. I don't know what you guys think.
I don't even know what Magic Maze is.
I haven't played any of these, although I probably feel like I should have played King Domino because everybody in the world's been playing it. But Magic Maze has been in my feed like for the past 2 weeks constantly.
Yeah.
I have not even seen it.
Yeah.
Ah, man. Well, you'll have to check it out. And you're coming to Origins, right?
I'm not.
What?
Yeah, I can't go. I spent so much money on my California and New Hampshire trip. I just can't travel.
It doesn't cost anything to go to Origins.
Yeah. How are we gonna talk about Origins if you're not there?
You guys can talk about it because I'll actually be back in school, so I might have to like trim it down to like once
a
month.
Maybe a tree will fall on her table. Anyway, okay, so that's that. So I guess we all need to play regular Spiel games, but more importantly, there's the Kenner Spiel, and the star of the show is Terraforming Mars.
Woo-hoo!
Which is an outrageous pick for them, for the Spiel committee, but absolutely, I say in my heart, just finally, and that's the whole point of the advanced thing, right? Like, the whole advanced argument. This is supposed to be for enthusiasts, not advanced people, but for me, I look at it as this whole reason for having a Spiel that was different than the other one was to have these be part of it. Like, good, complex games have a chance. Right, and so Terraforming Mars, awesome pick for them. Raiders of the North Sea, hopefully I wrote that right down.
Yeah,
that name right.
Yeah.
I still haven't played it, but Jessica, you liked it a lot.
I adore it. Yeah, I have not played it in a while. I don't think I've played it since December or so, or January. But I really maybe that was like a year ago, January. Oh shoot.
Well, I'm just glad that someone's going to force me to play this at Origins, or
at
least
good.
Because
it's
be like, oh, well, we got to play this now.
It's aesthetically pleasing to look at, and it's just a good worker placement game. So
yep, that's what I hear, and I just want to try it. And then the final one was the one that I'm like, why is this here?
I know. Why is it in the Kinderspiel?
And I said, and my reason was, and everyone's like, well, it's an enthusiast award, it's a blah blah blah, and I'm like, whatever. It should get a special award because it's an escape room game. It takes an hour to play, and once you're done playing it, you've ripped it apart.
That's dumb.
You cannot play again.
No, sorry.
I mean, I don't think it's dumb. I think if you get like three friends together, four friends together, like a little under $20, you get a little card game that you can fold together.
I just think for it to be nominated for this is dumb.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's taking the spot of some other, like, it's taking the spot of, frankly, Great Western Trail.
Great Western Trail, yeah.
It's taking its spot, and it shouldn't be. It should be getting a special award.
Fister hasn't been nominated at all this year. He's been nominated like however many years in a row.
I know. What is that? Ridiculous. So I don't know what they were thinking here, but, you know, people on Twitter can yell at me for thinking that, that's dumb. But, like, I still think Special Award is good for that. It is. It probably should have been a regular Spiel nominee, honestly.
It should have been the Spiel. But, it should have been a regular Spiel nominee.
But, yeah, everybody has their own opinion, I guess, but their opinion is wrong.
All right.
Oh,
well,
I'm going to do this part. Ha.
Go for
it. One last thing. We got a nice bump on listens for the one about hobo paying after the last episode. For those of you out there who got to hear all of that for the first time, I hope you enjoyed it.
Uh-huh.
I actually have not listened to it, and I put it in my queue, and I still have not listened to it. I still need to go back to it.
That is such a shame.
Yeah. Well, it's there waiting for you forever, and it's a classic. Yep.
Go and search it out, because it's awesome. So, you know what? It's time to move on to the meat of the podcast. All right, so we're gonna we should have had something very mysterious there, but that's okay. Mysterious mysteries. Mysterious mysteries. With these two words, TC launched a podcast topic, but he couldn't tell us anything about what it meant. So that means we're going to talk about games that involve mystery, because TC is too mysterious for his own good. So yeah. First off, we need to define what a quote-unquote mystery game is. What traits does a game need to have in order to have mystery or be considered mysterious? So I had a list of a few things here, but go ahead. I mean, when you think of like what a mystery game is, what traits does it have to have in order to be considered a mystery game?
Well, I think like at the end of the game, like something has to be revealed. And I'm, okay. Not necessarily, but that in, you know, in one instance, you know, to reveal some, you know, some grand reveal at the end.
Okay.
Yeah. Or even during the game. But yeah, I think that's good. That's like some you have to be, there has to be a puzzle that has a solution that becomes apparent at some point, right? Like if it's just one, like a racing game where everybody is kind of like doing their own thing, even if you're doing something that someone might find, like say you have a hand of cards that give you actions, I don't consider that a mysterious thing, right?
Like, right.
You just are doing things to try to get to the end and solving a puzzle, which is totally different than like, okay, he keeps looking at this card and he keeps going to this one spot. Like, I wonder, is he working towards is his main goal the green set collection or whatever, right?
Like Ticket to Ride.
Even that.
You get those cards that you got your hidden goals, you've got routes, you're like, ooh, I wonder if he's trying to go to Seattle, you know? And it's like, that's not really mystery. I mean,
it's a little bit mysterious. It's a little mysterious. Not really.
What just, about like TWA? Because everybody has like their hidden endgame scoring thing, but then it applies to everybody at the end of the game. So you're trying to deduce like based on what people are doing. I mean,
there
I don't
are
know.
A few games
I think that's
that
a little
are
more.
Like that.
Yeah,
it's a little closer to it, I would think. But I don't really think I would. It's one of those things. It's strange. This is why we want to kind of define what a mystery game is, because I do like your definition of something needs to be revealed or there is something a little bit hidden during the game itself, but I wouldn't necessarily still call TWA a mystery game.
Yeah.
So is there something else that helps us define kind of what a mystery game really is? Is that, I mean, do we think the theme plays into that too? I mean, obviously, when you look at a game like, let's say, Clue, you're like, of course, that's mystery. Because it's based on, like, mystery novels and, yeah. like, mysteries and things that happen. And yeah. so you got your theme there already, but then you also got, like you said, you got a great reveal at the end because there's hidden stuff you got to figure out. So deduction comes into it too. But there are other games, like you said.
There should usually be a train involved somewhere.
A train involved? Yes.
Train or a mansion.
Yes. Here's the question too. We'll talk about like hidden movement. Would it does an abbey count as a location that could be mysterious? Because you got nuns on the run, you know, and it has secret goals and trying to get to places and fool people. And there's hidden movements and things like that. I mean, is that a mystery game? I would consider it a mystery game.
I would too.
Yeah,
and there's mystery of the abbey too.
That's true. It is in an abbey.
In the abbey.
Well, there we go. Sold. And name of the rose. That's in an abbey.
How about you have to in some way be able to investigate the thing? that you're trying to do. Like, if there's no, if I have a secret, secret agenda, and you can't some way, like, try to deduce what it is, then I don't think, see, that's tough. I guess that's tough. I mean, like, that there should be some sort of inquisitive action that you can specifically take to try to figure out what someone has. Even if it's not, even if it's indirect or direct, it should just be something like
testing boundaries or testing something in the game or seeing what their specific action in. There has to be something you can do that allows you to figure out what that hidden portion is, or I guess the mystery of whatever that particular portion is. So, but I think also when you talk about mystery games, and at least when you talk about a mystery game, so like we're talking, what Jessica brought up, hidden roles and things like that. The TWA is not really a mystery game thematically or not, basically because it's not a core part of its component. Mm-hmm. Like, that hidden thing at the end is cool and it's a bonus, but it's not really the crux of what you're trying to do during the game. And so it's like the mystery part of that, I think, plays into what makes it truly a mystery game. It's like that hidden part
that you're trying to figure out. That discovery has to be like the main part of the game, yeah.
Yeah, which I think is probably true. I mean, even playing kids' games like Guess Who, that's a mystery game.
I love Guess Who. Oh, man, that's like nostalgia right there.
Yeah, but it's great. Well, that leads us right into what the next question that I want to open up. What are the classics in the mystery genre? So, like, I think Guess Who is a mystery game. And you say flat off that that's one of your favorites, you know, like nostalgia and playing as a kid. Mm-hmm. What other games, obviously, besides Clue? I mean, we all know we're going to name Clue. But anything
else? The game that you bought at PressCon with Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, yeah.
I can't even remember what that is.
It's
so unrelated to Alfred Hitchcock that I can't remember what the name of the thing is.
Oh, my gosh.
It just decided that you should be able to make his shadow to win.
Yeah, yeah. What was the name of the thing?
It was like. Wasn't that super racist?
Who murdered them?
That was Daryl. Daryl bought it.
Oh, yeah. Daryl got it. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because I was going to buy it, and then I bought this other thing, and Daryl's like, "I'll just buy that." And it was, yeah, I don't remember what it was called, but it had a bunch of stereotypes in it. So, you know, obviously it was from the 60s. But yeah, it was awesome though, because it's a mystery game, but it only had Alfred Hitchcock in name.
Yeah, well, it was memory.
It was
right?
Memory.
Like, it was memory plus set collection.
Right. Now, is that a mystery game though?
Yeah, is that a mystery? And I guess technically, if you have no clue what they are and you're just trying to guess based on what other people put in the yard of that game, which actually could have been a fun part of the game, honestly, had it been done a little bit like less madcap.
Right.
But like, if you're like, oh man, there's three cards there, and that person put that there, and that person put that one there, I don't know which one to pick. Man, okay, I'll go with this. Right, that would be a fun element of that, but it didn't really happen very often. It was just sort of like, oh, I don't even remember where I put that, and there's like 30 cards on the table.
Any other classics?
Yeah.
I mean, I have put a few here on the list, Mystery Mansion. I mean, mystery's right in the title. You can't not say Mystery Mansion is not a mystery game. I don't know if y'all ever played Mystery Mansion or not, but it's actually, Mystery Mansion is one that I picked up at PressCon the previous year in 2016. And it's a game that I used to play with my buddy Scott when I was a kid. And you're creating the mansion as you go along, and you open up corridors and you're trying to find these treasure chests that have gold in it, and then you have to make it out of the front door with the gold. And sometimes you run into like treasure chests that have nothing but cobwebs in it, and there might be a ghost over here, you know, and it's like, ooh, it's spooky and mysterious. And it's not like a lot of a deduction. It's mostly just kind of hunt and peck. You're looking for the right place to go and get things, and you're trying to get out the front door, and people kind of stop you. But it still feels mysterious. It's like it fits in. It's not just because of the name. It's the theme kind of does it. But at the same time, it's like the whole mystery of like looking for a hidden thing. Maybe the hidden thing is what defines this whole genre. It's just something hidden, period.
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, that's part of it. It's just that, you know, like you said, you're right. And it's just the fact that like if the game's not really... If you're just kind of deducing what someone's goal is, it's not as mysterious. It's more like, I kind of know what they're doing, and it doesn't directly affect me, and there's no, like, something. But it's almost like, I think there was Rex.
Yeah, Rex.
Dune was the original.
But, yeah.
And one of the races can guess who's going to win. And if that person wins, they win.
Hmm.
Yeah, which is cool.
That's cool.
But you think about that. That's like completely outside of the boundaries of it. But like that, it definitely is a mystery element, right? Like, because you got to figure, like, are they just helping that person because that's that? Or is it like, it takes it from the level of like, to me, that takes it from like a hidden goal to like, I got to figure this out, because if I don't, like, then that person's going to win anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
And they're just like, they're not fighting this person. Why aren't they fighting that person? They're just like letting them win so they can win. Well, I'm not going to let that happen.
Well, then it's, I mean, then you take it a step further, which is interesting too. And you have something like in Hearts where somebody's going to shoot the moon. You're like, are you trying to shoot the moon? And it's like the whole game kind of revolves around, you're going to shoot the moon, aren't you? You know? And it's like, that's not really mystery, but it's the same concept. So, anyways, it's close. So a couple of others I had on here, Stop Thief, that has just started back from Restoration Games, but even more precise than that was one of the original Hidden Movement games, which is Scotland Yard. And I mean, Scotland Yard is a mystery because Mr. X is running around England, and you're a bunch of investigators from Scotland Yard trying to track him down, and his movements are hidden. So you're trying to deduce kind of where Mr. X has been going around, and he only pops up from time to time when he uses tickets and things. So that's definitely a classic of the mystery genre, and there's no mistake in my mind that that's mystery.
Yeah. Going back to Clue, please tell me you have not heard about the new re-theme.
What?
Oh my god. Yes, I'm so glad you haven't heard about this yet. Okay, so the whodunit part is you're trying to determine who ate the cheesecake because the theme is the Golden Girls.
Oh, I did see somebody tweet that, but I didn't know what you're trying to figure out. That is ridiculous.
And you have to get it since you're a Clue collector.
I collect classic Clues. I don't collect all the new ones that's rebranded. I've got Firefly Clue, and that's about it. That's,
yeah.
You know, that's about the extent that I will go with my Clues. I'm not going to get Golden Girls Clue.
Oh, come on.
The
best Clue
I might do it so we can play it at a con or something.
That'd be hilarious.
That would be
pretty cool. What do they have to do? Is it like you eat it with your fork? Or?
I have no idea. I just heard a blurb about it on the radio.
Blanche in the pan, hidden in the pantry with a fork.
With some guy on her bed.
Yeah. Everything is with different types of forks.
Was it a pastry fork or was it a salad fork?
Oh, no.
Okay. So let's move on to this. So, let's just open it up. Do you like mystery games?
Yes.
Yes. Why? Yes. Why do you like mystery games?
I don't know. I like the surprise, I suck at deduction. So if it's like a game where you really have to deduce whatever, I'm not going to do it. But I just like finding out the end results, you know, even if I couldn't reach the conclusion myself. I just love that there's this hidden thing that you're trying to reach for and then seeing the big reveal at the end. I just think that's exciting.
It is. So you like mystery games where there are not necessarily incremental things, but you like the big surprise at the end when something happens?
Yeah. It has to be like something bigger, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's why I like the idea of the, you know, the exit puzzle games, or like the where you destroy the game as you go, but you get to like the final thing. Because it's kind of like you have a goal in mind and it's all just a big puzzle. And there's only one solution. And when you get to the end, you feel like really smart because you figured the thing out, right? Like, I don't know if that's the, I don't think that has to be the way a mystery game goes. Mm-hmm. I just think that really, that part of it, like, really helps. Like, being able to figure it out.
To solve
or
it,
to, like, yeah. Yeah, the solution, the honest solution to the puzzle, and then seeing it, and whether you were right or wrong, it's fine, but it's like, at least you get to see the end result.
Right, there's a big reveal.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's satisfying when, like you said, it makes you feel smart, if you figured it out. If you didn't, it's kind of the joy of the chase. But it all leads up to that kind of final reveal. But then there's also aspects of it that I really enjoy. Like, and I think it comes out the most in hidden movement games, where either you're the, let's take Scotland Yard for instance. If you're the investigators, you're like all talking, or even if you're just the person who's controlling all the investigators, but you're all like working and you're like, you know, testing all these boundaries and trying to figure out where Mr. X is. And then you see Mr. X pop up over here and you go, ooh, we better run over there. And then we can cordon off the area. And as Mr. X, you kind of do something from time to time where you're like, I'm going to take a small risk and go next to this investigator. And then it pans out because the investigator moves the other way, you know? And that's all part of the mystery genre, but there's like little tiny victories or suspenseful moments during the game that add up to the fun of that, whether you win or lose. So
I was just thinking of when we said that, I was just thinking of like last Friday.
Friday, yeah.
That's the only Halo I've written one I've played. Yeah.
Well, it was just, I was just thinking about the time, like, I can't remember who was playing as the killer, but like, but one of us just completely destroyed everyone on the map. Like, it was all of a sudden, we make a move. Wait, did you do that?
Okay, it was me.
Because it was like, we all make a move, and we're like, oh, this looks good. And then you're just like, oh, I can kill? Oh, I can kill again. And it's like, boom, 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 boom. Everyone's dead.
Yeah, I did. And they were all perfectly spaced.
It was like playing Chinese checkers. Yeah. Like, boink, 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 boink. Everybody dead. And I like that surprise ending, but at the same time, that was almost like, I don't know if that's like a good way of doing a mystery. Having a way that everything just you win,
ends. Yeah,
and
exactly.
The game's over.
Well, the last Friday is a very interesting entry into that type of genre. Anyway, to talk about, and we can kind of move into now. Like, what are some of the modern mystery games that we do like, or that we'd like to talk about that introduce that? And we don't really have it on our list, but I think Last Friday's one that's interesting to talk about because it does cool things. It's very suspenseful. Of course, the theme is very mysterious. You know, there's a killer and you're going around picking off campers, and the campers try to survive. And then all of a sudden you reverse the roles, and all of a sudden the campers are chasing down the killer. And so there's a lot of cool little instances that things have in that. But you're right in that it takes a little bit of the mystery away when all of a sudden they fall like dominoes.
Still fun. Well, that's the end of the 4-part game in the first part.
Right, exactly. Well, it didn't quite work out the way we expected. Still
it's
fun.
There's always a new busload of campers coming.
Yeah, bring some new ones in. That's right. Bring in the new campers.
House rule.
So let's talk about like what are some of our favorite modern mystery classics. Like, what do you think games that really fit into this mold that do it right and are exemplary of the mystery genre now? TC, why don't you go first?
All right. I had, and now I'm like revising my thoughts on it. But like, I this probably is a classic more than anything else. I'll go to the first one that I know is one, but that's a Sleuth, and that's like a just straight up deduction. Like, you are just trying to figure out which card is missing, and you can ask certain questions using certain other clue cards to try to figure it out. And you have your piece of paper, and you're doing your thing. And if Jessica, if you hate that type of game, that's the absolute pinnacle of that type of game, and you're gonna hate it the most, right?
But so, I'd like to try but you, it you once, do, you know, but
yeah, I mean, it, and it's not like you'll just burn your brain for 30 minutes and then it's over, right? But like, I mean, you've got your sheet, you're trying to figure out if that person asked that question, but they also had this other information on their sheet, what are they really asking, blah, blah, blah. And so you have to write down kind of what the answer is, mm-hmm. but then also to cross things off, but then also what could the answer not be based on what I asked them earlier versus, yeah. So you have to like, so it's like on top of writing a note as to which ones can't be, you have to write, like, which ones have I asked about to a certain person that can't be, therefore, yeah. So
yeah. Never mind. That's the pinnacle of something I would never want to do.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's like, so you have to figure out your own little note system. And I'm like, that one is so specific to what it is that it just, I don't know. It's a classic in its own right because of that. Like, it just is so a deduction game. I like it. I like those types of little mental exercises. So,
well,
like,
and there's
even
a reason
one,
why
it's
still
reveal, right,
in so. Print 30 years later, 20 or yeah. what, whatever yeah. years later. Yeah.
So I'll give that as first entry, and then I'm going to think about this again, because I was thinking about Hidden Movement and all these other ones, and like, man, I love puzzles, but like, some of them are less puzzle-y than I like. So, Jessica.
Well, when I look at the list that I put here, there's just one mechanic that I love, and that's hidden roles. I love, you know, having a role and trying to, you know, there's one person you're trying to suss out or a group of people you're trying to suss out. And, but I hate when I'm like the bad guy that you're trying to find, though, because I like, thankfully I have dark skin, so you can't see me get red and nervous and stuff. But I just like, I can't, I'm just a bad liar and stuff. But my number one pick is BSG, Battlestar Galactica. I love Battlestar Galactica, where everyone has a role. And at the beginning of the game, someone could potentially be a Cylon, but not. But then even get activated halfway through the game, which I think is such a cool mechanic. And could change the direction of the game. So, love BSG. Secret Hitler is another one that I played. I played that at Unpub for the first time. And that one is very similar to, like, Resistance. But for some reason, it's just more fun where one group of people are, like, the fascists. And then the other people are the other people. I can't remember what they're called. But but just like in the other games, you could be lying. You could be trying to direct people to think you're somebody in the other group, but then surreptitiously on a subsequent turn, you know, kind of change the tide and everything. So that's another one. Mysterium is cool with the ghost who knows everything, but then has to give clues, and then you have to try to figure out based on the clues. I think that's really cool.
Mystery's right in the title.
Yeah,
so.
Mysterium. And then, well, translated in Polish, is it like mystery something? I mean, the mostro, whatever. I don't know.
Tajemnicze de mostro.
Yeah.
I don't know how it directly translates, but they call it Mysterium. So.
Yeah. And then one that actually is more themed around what I actually do for a living is Deception Murder in Hong Kong, where there is a forensic scientist, which is what I do for a living. I'm a forensic scientist.
Oh, you're not a murderer?
Hey, she might be. Maybe playing a forensic scientist throughout
by day.
What's funny
is that forensic scientists don't actually do what they do in that game, but that's fine. But you know who the murderer is and know who the other investigators are and are trying to give clues and get the investigators to suss out who the murderer is. And I like playing it at even bigger counts because then there are like accomplices that are also working with the murderer. So you kind of have to figure out both. There might be a witness too who saw something. And if the murderer gets away with it, then the witness dies, that kind of thing. So it's just like, I just think it's so cool trying to suss out, like, use the clues and then also like pay attention to the people, what they're doing and how they're acting and stuff to figure out the different roles. I just think is so much fun, even though I sweat when I'm the bad guy.
Yeah. Love being the bad guy. It's fun, especially
the social element is really cool.
Yeah, and
I think that makes makes a lot of these games work a lot better. I'm sorry,
I think so too. Even sometimes in like the Hidden Movement games, you can be a little social about it. You know, like you can get inside people's heads, and like on my list, Letters from Whitechapel is one of the best modern classics as far as Hidden Movement's concerned. I mean, I don't think there's any game that does it better, and it's just the theme behind it is awesome. You know, you're chasing down Jack the Ripper as Jack's, you know, murdering the prostitutes around Whitechapel, and kind of a very grim theme, but at the same time it's very thematic in how everything works in the game and how all of Whitechapel is laid out. And like the when you're playing as Jack, there are certain moments that are just make you sweat like crazy. Like you're trapped between two investigators and you're like trying, like, can I just throw a rock down the alley and have one of them chase the rock, you know? And but when you pull off, again, what I was talking about, when you pull off those smart moments, but sometimes you can get in people's heads, like as Jack, you can say, like, are you sure, or do you think that I'm over there? I don't know, I could be over here, you know, so you can kind of play head games as you play it.
Or you could do like my friend Brian did when he was him one time, and as he's moving a car, just whisper out loud, Brussels. He didn't realize he was saying it out loud. And like, really? the game's typically quiet, but then all of a sudden we heard them like bust up laughing. You're like, what happened? And he was like moving something, just saying, Brussels. It was hilarious.
Well, other ones that are on my list, one of course is Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective. And that game, as far as mystery is concerned, is awesome because you're...
Yeah.
I mean, TC, you introduced me to that game, and I know you've played it more than any of us. I've played it, you know, I think I've had 3 adventures in Sherlock Holmes, but you've played, like, almost all of it, haven't you?
Yeah, surprisingly, I haven't got the whole way through. I'm still at either 9 or 8. So I've done either 8 or 9 of them, either 7 or 8 of them. So I still got a few left. Same thing with, but no, that's, it kills me that Mythos Tales too.
Yeah.
I've gotten through everything but like either the last one or the last 2.
Man, you've been playing that like crazy.
Yeah, I mean, but when I first got it, I just went right through it. And I think the problem was, like, and the reason why it's not on my list here is because it's just... Oh, it's such a missed opportunity. It's just such a missed opportunity. I play it, and I'm like, it has these things that could be better than Sherlock Holmes, right? Like, it has, like, 1 or 2 things. Like, adding in the little time element where you have a specific amount of time to do it is brilliant. Because in Sherlock Holmes, you sometimes just, you just don't know if you should go any further. You're kind of like, ah. And this, you can go further if you want, but, like, you know you screwed up if you were going further, right? Like, right. You know you're messing up, right? And that's great. That's a perfect thing. And the fact that you can go to a place and you get a card and it says, here's number 2, because now you know you have information. And yeah. The cool thing about that was that later on that gets used, and in later ones it's either good or bad. And you should know before you go there whether it could be good or bad, because having that knowledge might make you more insane if you get that knowledge reversed, right? Like, or something bad could happen, right? And that, to me, was the best part of that game. And then they added all kinds of weird stuff that should not even be there. And it's like, oh, please. I want Mythos Tale 2.0 already, where it just all those things are like, so it fixes off the side all of it, and get back to the, like, the base, right? But those 2 games, man, just absolutely great examples of mysteries. And especially because they are puzzles that you can solve and have a solution and even have motives explained, right? Like, even if you missed parts, it explains more. And that is a completely different idea than, like, interactive hidden roles too. It's like, just, it means that you can do mystery in multiple different ways. You don't even have, like, the co-op aspect is fun without even having someone secretly sitting there playing as, like,
the bad guy,
the master.
Yeah,
the bad guy.
Well, it's interesting too, because it's like, it's so different than a game like Clue. You know, Clue is deduction and going around and trying to figure out different things, and you're doing the same thing in Sherlock Holmes, but it's much more open-ended. And you have to ask certain questions and kind of have a larger deductive and inductive pool than you have from any other game, because it has so much open-ended things, so many different, you know, like, you're looking through the phone book and looking at advertisements and newspapers and things like that. It's like, it's just a larger, more real world look that makes it gamifies it. And I think that's really cool. A couple of them that were on my list, Mystery Express is kind of Uber Clue. It's I don't even know if it's still in print, but it's a Days of Wonder game, and it's on a train. Like TC said, you know, it's got to be on a train, possibly.
It's got to be on a train.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's on a train. And
yeah, this is a true mystery.
It is. It's actually a lot of fun. It's a little hard to explain when you first get into the game. Once you play one round, you start to see how it times out. But speaking of time, though, the one thing that I don't like about Mystery Express is the clock element. Because there's some people who play that game that are like Rain Men when it comes to that clock. And I just can't do it. I'm just like, whenever I play it, I'm like, I'm not even going to pay attention to the clock. Because it's like, it goes by in real time. It's like real fast. You flip through the thing and you got to try to figure out which one was missing. And I know I'm going to just screw it up every time. So I just focus on doing the rest of it. And I'm like, I'm just going to ignore the clock completely. It's still fun, though. Great components and very immersive. And the other one that you gave me for Christmas 2 years ago was Witness. And we need to play more of, by the way. I've played some since before.
Oh, yeah.
It's awesome. You know, I mean, you have to have four people to play it, but it's like we said, it's the whisper game. And it's like, you know something and you give it to this other person who now knows this something. They could relay it to another person later. So it's telephone / whispers / trying to figure out this mystery of how these things happen. And there's a whole ton of different scenarios in the box that you play with, and you try to figure out the mystery by either whispering to the person to your left or to your right. So you get different information during different parts of the game, and it's super cool. It's very thematic and very different. It's unlike any other game that I've played.
Yep.
That's really cool. Any other thing?
I'm going to go back and say yes for sure. Love Letter.
Yes.
Is a mystery.
Yeah.
And I was kind of hemming and hawing on it because I was like, well, you just have a hidden role. But no, it can change during the course of the game. And there's especially the Baron, I believe, is the one where you have to choose someone else at the table and compare the number in your hand with someone else. And I think that, to me, makes it really a mystery game. Is Guess Who a mystery game?
Yeah. Sure, why not?
Is it? Okay. Then Love Letter has to be.
Yeah.
It's
like,
yeah.
You know, it's
well, I think small. I think in the same vein, even Coup could be considered a mystery game. Because, again, you are sometimes mixing those roles up and trying to deduce the roles. Yeah. But I think Love Letter as a pure type of mystery game definitely fits.
Well, we didn't mention Insider.
Insider, yeah. And as far as, like, just really quick with Insider, it does have that mystery element simply because you are trying to suss out who that person,
yeah,
who the insider is.
And sometimes they're just sneaky, just like staying back, you know? So, which I think
true.
Is cool that you can do. Which yeah, is why I like it versus my hated one we're going to talk about.
It is called 20 Questions Traitor is exactly what that is.
Yeah.
Or Wear Words. So, anyway.
Terrible.
So, let's wrap up this section with talk about some modern mystery games that you really don't like or just aren't very good at. So, TC, you very humbly said that you're very good at all of them.
I'm good at all of them, but so I don't know what one I would be good at. Maybe one that's just pure memory, but then no one would have any fun playing it, so
no.
It wouldn't matter. I would say, I was saying there was one, and I think this goes along with other ones, and I'm not going to single it out specifically. Well, I will, but... But I'm not going to say this is the only one that has this problem. But, like, there's several microgames since Love Letter came out, several different microgames that work on this idea that, like, there's one thing that's missing or I have to deduce what other people have. And one of them that I played was Microfilms. And I'm not saying that this one specifically is the worst. It just wasn't very good. It was like I guess I don't like it when you try to add more complexity to a micro game within, like, the deduction family, I guess. Right? Like, once you get to a certain point, you could put so much information on a card or give people so many different options that they can, like, use, like different, like, special abilities that they could use, that it can get overwhelming, no matter if you have 10 cards or if you have 300 cards, right? Like, it still gets overwhelming. And so when people try to add in too many different things in too little of a space for, like, deduction, oh, it just gets me. But the other one, yeah. The other one was Betrayal at House on the Hill. I love the idea of this game. I absolutely dislike playing it.
Aww.
It's like I love that you explore the house and then all of a sudden you're like, oh crap, now we figure out what it was really all about, right? And
right.
You're like, and you randomly turn to one of the pages and somebody becomes the bad guy and everyone else becomes the good guys.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh man, that's so good. Tentacles are coming up out of the mansion's floor and we got to survive and get out. Or it's like a werewolf is now there and he has a little wolf buddy that's going around with him. But every time you do that, it's like pause the game for 10 or 15 minutes while
yeah.
everyone reads. Then, like, if someone has a question on the rules, which they inevitably do.
Of course they do.
There is no way to relay the You almost need a moderator there to be like, oh, what was your question? Okay, yeah. So
the only
that's how
way
this works.
For Betrayal House on the Hill to work is for a group of veteran Betrayal House on the Hill players to play it. But then by the time you're a veteran of it, you've almost explored all the mysteries of it. So it's like,
yeah,
It's hard. It's very tough because it's a great concept, and I love it. It is a mystery game, but it does become a completely different game when there's the flop, and you have to be the bad guy, and then you have to know all these other additional rules you didn't know at the beginning. You're like, what's happening? You know?
I'm saying you're not even deducing the mystery. It's just the fact that you're going around exploring, and then the mystery is thrust upon you.
Yeah. Like,
what was wrong with this house? Oh no, it was this, right? Like, and it's completely different than what you expected, right? Which I guess technically, after you've played it like twice, it would not be like, oh my god, anymore. It would be sort of like, oh, what's the crazy thing that happens this time?
Exactly, right.
But I will say, it's like people play this game, like the heck out of the game, right?
People,
like,
when people love it, they love it.
I think it's fun.
I'm just saying, I wish it was, I think Rob Davio at one point said he could never really fix this game. It is what it is.
Yeah.
It's like he made it and it's awesome, but it's like, it is what it is. He's not going to go back and fix it because it's really tough to fix something like that, right? Like, it's just, it is the game that it is, right?
It's true.
And it just doesn't appeal to me because just, all that strategy goes out of the box and then the flop happens and, so yeah, I don't know. But nope, not for me.
All right, Jessica.
Oh, well, no surprise. Stupid Spyfall.
The best game ever.
So you have the KFC list, and mine is my board game version is the Spyfall list.
It's the Spyfall list. Now, Here's the thing. I'm wondering if you would like the Chameleon. Because I got a review copy from Big Potato Games, and we played it at Mosley's. And I was going to wait until this portion because I knew you were going to say Spyfall. So the Chameleon is essentially Spyfall with words, and it's much more structured, so you don't have to like make stuff up like you do in Spyfall, but you play in a similar manner where, you know, one of you basically is the Chameleon, and you're basically trying to say something that relates to a topic. Like, one of the topics was movie, and then you roll these dice and you look on a grid, and everybody's got given a card. They look at the secret grid, and so they all know what, except for the Chameleon, what that, you know, topic or the thing is. So let's say Jurassic Park was one of ours. And then you count down three, you know, to five, and then immediately you go quickly around the table and everybody says one word related to that topic.
What if you're first?
I know. If you're first in the Chameleon, though, and even if you're first on that, but you just say it off the top of your mind. But the thing is, you got to be subtle, because if you give two specific clues, the Chameleon will find out what that topic is.
No.
What? I like it just because it doesn't put as much pressure on that person. They just say a word.
So just like what happened to me in Spyfall.
And then everyone laughs.
I would be the first person to have to say a freaking word, and I'd be the Chameleon. And it's like Jurassic Park, and I say, you know, divorce or something. Like, it's just like, I mean, oh. God.
Well, if the clue was Jurassic World, that would be perfectly accurate. Well, I guess Tim's parents are going through a divorce in Jurassic Park. Tim and Lex's parents. So we're going way down the rabbit hole on deep cuts on Jurassic Park. This is very funny
because, you know, Spyfall has the moment. Spyfall has that moment where everyone just says the thing, and then everyone just goes, and nods, right? And, like, this game does not have that. It just has everyone saying a word really rapid fire, and everyone going, what?
Exactly.
Why did you say white picket fence for...
It's weird, Jurassic too, because Park. Then you start asking yourself, like, okay... Because then, like, you start to give it away. Like, we went rapid fire around, and Eric Booth said, butts. And I got it immediately because I knew what the word was, but I was like, we all started laughing because it was just out of the blue, butts. And then the Chameleon, who I think it turned out to be Mitchell, didn't know it until somebody else said, I think Adam Skelding said something that gave it away. And I can't remember exactly what, but it was two very specific references that together just immediately said Jurassic Park. But he was the second one to say, and then he just goes, butts. And then we're just like, we lost it because But it creates some very interesting and funny scenarios. So I'm looking forward to trying that a few more times as far as like the party master. But it's very structured, and it's a way to make people not feel like they're completely on the spot like in Spyfall. So I think in that way, it's a way to introduce people a little bit more easily.
I can play it a couple times before it goes on the Spyfall list.
Okay.
With Russian Railroads. So.
All right, so I'll throw out mine, and this is the one where TC is going to say you're crazy, but I finally played Alchemists. And it is
a great game.
I think, to be honest with you, I'm not going to argue that it's probably a great game, but I do not get it at all. I played it, and I ended up, putting down and figuring out two of the alchemy combinations for, like, I don't know, the fiddle fern and something else. Don't remember which ones I did. But I got two of them, and then because of the way I was playing, everybody was like, well, I'm not going to invest in yours because you absolutely have no idea what you're doing. And I'm like, you're absolutely right. But you know what? I was right. But here's the thing, I have no idea how I knew that they were right at the end of the game, because I'm like, going, okay, well, here's this cross reference for this, and then going back and looking over, well, if this is an X and that's a negative, could this be a negative and an X and I'm just like, boom, it just blew my mind. And I'm like, okay, I officially know my brain doesn't work this way at all.
Well, you need to play the advanced version. I don't know what you're talking about.
What are you talking about? That was the beginner version.
That was the beginner version. Come on. You gotta play the advanced version now.
My ears would bleed. And I'm usually pretty good at deduction games, but this one blew my mind. It made me feel like the dumbest person on earth. It was not a fun experience for me. I thought the components were cool, and the whole pressing your luck as far as, like, if you want to test the potion out on your student or drink it yourself, I thought that was brilliant. Selling potions. But the thing is like, twice I went to sell the potion to this dude, and I realized, I was like, I don't know how to make the potion. What am I doing?
That's how I felt in that stupid game Timbuktu. I felt I just Timbuktu could not get the deduction at all.
That's a tough one too, and it's actually a little bit of it's a pretty good mystery one too, and it's got camels in it, so we should probably put that on the to mention list. But Timbuktu is a tough one, but it's cool. I can get the deduction on that one, but it is brain bendery. But Alchemist to me made me feel like I was a kindergartner playing a game.
I wish I'd have been there.
I think. I think you're on. I think you're right, because there was so many people that, like, it takes legitimately, well, I would say it takes a full game to really know what you're doing in that game. But then on top of that, like, for people to actually understand what the deduction part is and why they're writing something down, it takes a few rounds of the first game to even get to that point. And then you have to play the whole game to understand what you did. And then you have to play again, right? And that's really tough to get people to do, especially with something so brain-bending like that, right? But that's my thing. That's my jam. Like, Alchemist was like, it blew my mind in the sense that, like, it blew my mind and got me thinking in a way I hadn't thought for a while, but really do like. And so I'm just like, I gotta love this game. But I would say, from a mechanic standpoint, I have some issues with it. Because even when you play beginner or advanced version, there is, like, a little bit of this weird leeway that they have for how you guess, get the right answer at the end. And it uses the app, and I forget exactly what, but there's this weird wiggle room with, like, answers. I don't know, there's something weird going on, but and if you go and, but you can completely ruin it too if no one has the right, if everyone doesn't update the app at the same time, you can type in the same number and it goes to different things. Which we had the one game, and that just ruins the whole
if it's not matching up, there's no point in playing. I think that it definitely does some things that are cool for a game. And using the app and trying to figure out, those little mysteries and how things mix together is cool. It's a cool concept. But to me, the whole deduction portion of it is just so out of left field and esoteric that it just, I'm like,
it's just,
It's great. It's crazy. No, it's great. Absolutely crazy. Absolutely crazy. But it does have great things going on. It's just not the game for me. So, Daryl, thank you for getting that game for me for Christmas 2 years ago. I never unwrapped it. I played actually Ruth and Jeff Ashton's copy the other night. And I realized that it's gone. It's on my BGG auction list, unwrapped, new and shrink. So go to BGG.
New and shrink.
Go to BGG.
Oh, man, maybe I'll pick it up.
Get it. My username on BGG is
C-Kirkman. It's a heavy game.
And come check out with the podcast. I'll include a link to my BGG auction. There will be 2 days left probably when this podcast airs. So go ahead and pick that up. You know what? This has been fun, and we have definitely gotten to the end of the mystery of this podcast. Let's move on to the backside. All right, so we're going to go kind of quickly through notable Kickstarters. We've got a few little things we want to talk about here. Peter Hayward asked me to make a note of Jelly Bean shirts that he has currently on Kickstarter. I'm going to open this link really quickly, which I should have done before we started this part of the podcast. There are 10 days to go left for Jelly Bean shirts. There are three available that you can get. They're all gamer-related shirts that have nice graphical things on the front of them. One is like a worker placement thing. One is trying to figure out like all these little icons as to what game it represents. And one is a cat sleeping in a Catan box.
That's cute.
So cute. So Jelly Bean shirts from Bluebeard Entertainment and Jelly Bean Games. Right now it's at $6,584 of its $5,000 goal. So you can pledge with confidence. 10 days to go. So as of this podcast airing, probably about 3 or 4 days left to go, depending on Jessica's workload and getting this thing edited. So go and check that out on Kickstarter. There is another one that has not quite launched, but will have launched by the time this is out. And speaking of mysteries, it is Halloween. Ooh.
So will it be available by Halloween?
I don't know. And that is a very important question.
No.
I bet they want to have it available by Halloween because they probably want to get it out in retail for Halloween. But here's the description of Halloween. Halloween is a tactical game for 2 to 4 players in which you take on the role of a demon lord that controls the many ghosts on the board. Carefully plan your actions through a unique mechanism that allows you to manage multiple ghosts to try to outwit your opponents. No idea what that unique mechanism is, but summon ghosts, move them around the board, fight other ghosts, or use one of the numerous action cards that can give you great tactical advantage. So they have definitely grasped that it is a tactical game.
Hopefully the unique mechanic is a vacuum.
Like Luigi's Mansion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to blow the
Perfect.
Ghosts around
yes,
the board.
That's the unique mechanic. All right. So anyway, it looked cool to me. I thought the art was kind of spooky and everything, and I like spooky games. So I'll check that on Kickstarter. But I'd like to see the video and see a little bit more what this unique mechanism is. And I do like tactical games. So if it is truly tactical, like they say, I probably will like it. We mentioned on the last podcast, and I put a little Future Chris note on the last podcast about Flow of History from Taste of Minstrel Games, and we had a complete discussion on why it was on Patreon, and then lo and behold, they did what we thought they probably would do. They pulled it from Patreon and put it on Kickstarter.
Indiegogo.
Is that
Yeah, Indiegogo.
Not Patreon.
Indiegogo, sorry. Why did I say Patreon? I'm sorry. Not Patreon. Indiegogo. Yes. So, does that shock either of you?
Not at all.
No, and it's making more money. That's not shocking either.
No, it's not shocking either. It's making a lot more money. Not only the people that obviously saw it on Patreon. Why do I keep saying that? Indiegogo. maybe that's why I wasn't making a lot of money. People are going to Patreon. But yeah, of course, Kickstarter's got much more visibility on the platform. It makes complete sense to be able to just dig into Kickstarter, get that money. You know, I expected. The thing is like, it seems like it would be nice to see if he could go all the way to the end of Indiegogo and see if it plays out. But business sense wise, it makes sense to go
yeah.
to Kickstarter.
I wonder if the original Indiegogo backers were irritated.
I don't know. And I haven't really seen a lot of chatter on whether that is true or not. But I would think, I mean, like I said, and I joked on the last podcast that it looks beautiful. But I wouldn't back it on Indiegogo because I don't want to really back on another platform. Now, I haven't backed on Kickstarter yet, but I have much more I'm much more likely to back it on Kickstarter than I would have on Indiegogo. And I think a lot of people are like that too.
Yeah.
But anyway, thought it was just interesting to mention. I'll throw out really quickly that I got a press release for Hand of Fate Ordeals. And it says here that a Kickstarter campaign for Hand of Fate Ordeals launches today. And TC, you might be more familiar with Hand of Fate Ordeals than I am because it's a video game, right?
Not even.
Sadly. Not even.
But usually, like, usually I would be, but like, these are like, it's like Hand of Fate is like outside of my, like, if someone gave me that title, I would be normally be like, that does not sound like a game I would be playing. Does
not it indie have enough.
Puzzles? Yep, it's not indie enough. Get indier.
Well, that's a new t-shirt.
Yeah, get indier. Get out and get indier. Oh, that sounds weird. Anyway, so I just wanted to mention it because I got a press release, and one of the people I think that's involved with the campaign is actually on Instagram and does or has had pictures, some really nice pictures of the stuff for Hand of Fate. I don't know anything about it, so don't take this as a me backing the campaign or not, but you can go check it out. We'll have a link to the campaign on the podcast. But what I thought was the interesting part of this was that the goal is to raise $30,000 Australian. It will conclude on June 21st for an eventual release in November of 2017. And what they say is that no matter what happens with the Kickstarter campaign, that it's going to be released in November, no matter what. So it's kind of interesting that they're kind of funding a larger print run with the $30,000 extra, but the game will be printed no matter what, whether they get that extra money or not, which is an interesting approach. And I guess we've seen that a couple places, but this is the first time I've seen it actually mentioned right up front in a press release. And what do we think about that?
Well,
what do they need?
As long as it works.
Yeah. And what do they need the extra money for? Is it for something
particular? They just say that it's a successful effort will allow a larger print run to be produced, ensuring a wider distribution.
Well,
so basically they just, they're going to make the game
about how they want to do it or why they want to do it.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I mean, it's announcing this basically what people say, well, Kickstarter is a pre-order. And I guess in this particular instance it is, but it's saying that, what you can back knowing that the game's going to come out no matter what. If it doesn't fund, then you're not going to be charged and maybe you can pick it up later, but it's not going to have a larger print run, so it's going to be harder to get a hold of.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're putting their own money in too.
Yeah, obviously. So I think it's interesting. So I just thought it was interesting and thought that I would make mention of it. Now, I don't know what this bottom portion is. This must be a TC link. So why don't you tell us about this next one?
Oh, yeah. I put this up there because I follow Nick Bentley on Twitter, and he's the guy that made the game Stinker and what's the other one? Tomato? Is that the abstract little? It makes an abstract game. You're right. I think it's called Tomato. Or Ketchup. Ketchup.
Ketchup.
Ketchup. It looks like a tomato. The board looks like a tomato. But Nick Bentley made these. He's working with I think it's just like another group of people too that are like make these things called troxes. And they're I hope that's the way. I didn't look at the video, so I hope that's the way you say it. But it's kind of like origami building blocks. And while I was looking at him like confused as to how you could make this, I was surprised that it's like it's already funded. It's doing well, right? Like I'm like, oh, okay, that's good. So I just wanted to call attention to it. But it's like troxes, these origami building blocks that you can build non-traditional shapes with, I guess. And so they just, they just have pictures up there of just different things that they're building with it. He's going around to conventions, playing with them on my Twitter feed. So I just want to mention it because I think the guy is a pretty cool dude. And he designs things in the toy arena sometimes. And I just don't design that way. So I think it's interesting.
Yeah, I like when people play around and different things like that and get a little more artsy. Is he indie enough for you?
Oh, he's totally indie enough. He's way indie. He's past indie. He might be more indie than me. But he also is toy. So he's a little, I hope he doesn't get picked up by Hasbro. He could sell out pretty easily.
All right. Well, that wraps up the Kickstarter portion. Go check these out. Come to DiceHateMe.com and check on the links to these on the podcast page. And we'll just move into Dice Hit Me Games news really quickly here. The Viva Javas are here.
Woo!
Yeah.
Yay. They're finally in the warehouse. They're also available to buy at the Greater Than Games online store. And you should be able to either pre-order or pick them up at many online retailers and also your friendly local game store, because they'll be in large distribution. We've sold some, I believe we've got them through ACD and Alliance. So if your retail store is not carrying Viva Java, you should go and tell them to carry both Viva Java and Viva Java, the coffee game, the dice game.
That's
exactly right. We're actually coming up on the 50th year anniversary of Viva Java. Tell them TC sent you. That's right. check those out. We also have, for those of you who are early adopters of Viva Java, we have on the Greater Than Games store, you can buy the red and green bean upgrade packs. So now you can tell the difference between the red and the brown beans. Mm. And you get the vibrant green beans too. So you can get all those together. Go and check those out on greaterthangames.com. Exoplanets is almost here. I'll just mention that they've wrapped up the production of that. That is on a boat now. And I will be doing an update soon with the tracking for that. So we'll have that pretty soon. Just mention really quickly that Origins is coming up, and at Origins there will be three different types of demos that people can try out through the Grand Gaming Academy, and that is Fate of the Elder Gods, Exoplanets, and Laser Riders. So if you want to get in demos of that, you can go and check out the pre-registered events, and also they'll have some generic events that they'll be demoing those from the Grand Gaming Academy. So we know that, Jessica, you're not going to Origins.
I'm not, sadly.
That is sad. Yep.
I had so much fun at it last year. It was probably, if not tied for first place, it's first place as my favorite con from last year. So I'm really sad I couldn't go. Yeah, I was even going to demo for CGE and stuff, but I have to stay. And now that I'm going to actually PAX Unplugged in November, because my mom lives in Philadelphia. And then so after the convention, I'll stay there for the week of Thanksgiving with her. So I need to save up the vacation time and all that for that. So,
yeah, it makes sense. Well,
I guess
avoid our feed, because we're going to be posting about everything.
I'll just be jealous. I'm used to it.
Well, I don't know if we'll actually have any pregame discussion of Origins before then. We probably won't, since you're not going, but we'll basically talk about Origins after it's all over. So it'll be at least me and TC and Daryl recounting the types of things that we cover.
Cool.
So anyway, we'll mention on the next podcast, because the next podcast will actually come out probably the week of Origins. So hopefully you can download and listen to that on your way to Origins. And we'll be back and talk more about it after we get back from Columbus. Unpub news. Daryl's not here, but he mentioned before that tickets are now on sale for Unpub Midwest. And that occurs in Grand Rapids, Michigan in November. So you should go to unpub.net. and check those out, get the tickets, and sign up for your tables for that. Also, we have the official sign up for Origins Unpub tables. We'll have an official Unpub presence there. You can go to unpub.net and sign up for that as well. Am I missing anything for Unpub?
No, that's good. You got the Origins thing.
Yeah. We're going to be there. We're going to be rocking and rolling the Unpub booth. It's going to be awesome.
Yep, I even signed up ahead of time. I'm like way in advance.
I think I'm going to sign up ahead of time myself, just to make sure I got a spot.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know what? I think that's about it for this episode of the State of Games. We'll be back next time with even more great board game discussion. Of course, we love hearing from all of you, so if you have any topics or new segments you'd like to hear about, we can add them to the show. You can email those ideas to thestateofgames@gmail.com or tweet them at @thestateofgames. You can also go to DiceHateMe.com and comment on the podcast, or join Guild 1903 on BoardGameGeek.com. You can also hit me up on Twitter at DiceHateMe, and I'll mention, since the anniversary is coming up, you should follow me and hit me up on Twitter at DiceHateMe. You should also follow me on Instagram at DiceHateMe and on Facebook at DiceHateMe. What about the rest of you?
Well, I'm at Puppy Shogun on the Instagram.
Yes, you are.
And I also do. You can also find me on Deep Design doing a perfect, or on Perfect Information doing a Deep Design segment. And I do that, just like every episode, every other episode. So check it out. It's an awesome thing if you like game design. And that's me.
And you can find me on Twitter at FeldFangirl. And if I have not deleted the account, I'm on Instagram at FeldFangirl. If it's still open, there's probably two photos, one of my dog and one of my cat. So.
Oh, come on. You got to get back on there.
And you can find me on the Hour Turn podcast, although my activity may be slowing down. I missed the last, due to a scheduling snafu, something happened with our last episode. I won't be on the next episode. I have not been as active on the What You Do Play This Week podcast, but I will be back there as well.
All right. Well, until next time, this is Dice Hate Me.
This is Bubby Shogun.
And this is Feld Fangirl.
Saying thanks for listening, and may all your rolls
be sixes. This is even worse when we're on video and can see each other.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
I tried to conduct us. It did not help at all.
That did not help.
It was too slow. It was unnatural.